The topic of the next set of mini lectures is culture. You know, culture is important in terms of the influence that communication has at several levels. For example, we're aware of the idea of selectivity, that people process messages in ways that are biased based on their pre-existing beliefs. They tend to see what they expect to see, to not see what they do not expect to see, for example, at the level of selective perception. And at the level of selective retention, people are more likely to stick with attitude change, which results from a message which is culturally consistent, than one which is culturally inconsistent. We also know that culture plays a big role at the level of attitude change, insofar as people are more likely to change their attitudes if those attitude changes will be perceived by them as culturally consistent, and less likely to do so if they see them as counter to the dominant culture. So, what is culture? Culture, Larson says, is a pattern of activities, beliefs, and values. Sillars and Grönbeck give a similar kind of definition when they say that the beliefs, attitudes, values, myths, ideologies, routines, and other behaviors that define a people may be called culture. And so cultures are characterized, for example, by their own literature, sports, arts, media, and stories. What's extremely important from our purposes is to understand how influential culture is. Larson writes, "The power of a social system, or culture, to train its members is immense, even though people do not often realize it as they react to the dictates deeply ingrained in them. The dominant culture teaches us to act. This cultural training and societal pressure are instilled in us from birth," Larson writes. And certainly that is true. One can think even before birth, many of us are instilled with ideas that we are either boys or girls, for example, by the way we are talked to in the womb. Over and over and over again, in many different versions and in many mundane ways, we are taught our culture. And so that cultural training is powerful. Larson writes, we often overlook culture as it subconsciously acts on us. We develop shortcuts or habits for dealing with life that are emergent largely from our culture, and we often forget how strong they are. Few of us have to be told, for example, when we begin driving, perhaps at age 16, that we should be driving on the right side of the road. It is common sense, obvious, taken for granted that we drive on the right-hand side of the road. 16 years of seeing people drive on the right side of the road, if we are Americans, is enough to convince us that driving on the right side of the road is the only sane thing to do. If, however, we had grown up in some other countries, we might have very different ideas about what was common sense and taken for granted. Culture, therefore, develops for us certain thought patterns. Those patterns are connected to one another so that our ideas gain a coherence that Gertz refers to as a web, that we have a web of thoughts that are interconnected. Another word for a web, of course, is a net, something that can constrain us, and culture often does that. And so it's not that much of a surprise that Sillars and Grönbeck write of the prison house of culture, and Larson indicates that we are all prisoners of our own culture. The significance to persuasion, of course, is both macro, in the sense that our entire culture is created through persuasion and acts on us in this way, and micro in the ways we talked about a few moments ago, the idea that our culture exerts influence over us as persuadees at the level of decoding and acceptance and retention of persuasive attitude change.